From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Controller DiNapoli finds the federal shutdown may have hurt Wall Street profits. From political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on how the new mayor of New York City will get along with Governor Cuomo. And the governor signs a law that caps agricultural land assessment increases. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State's controller finds that the dysfunction in Washington may take a bite out of Wall Street profits for the remainder of this year. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The analysis by State Controller Tom DiNapoli finds the recent gridlock in Congress, higher interest rates, and the J.P. Morgan $13 billion settlement over bad mortgages is contributing to lower earnings and profits for New York's financial industry.
The impact of the volatility in interest rates over the summer, we see that dampening profits. The cost of settlements and fines from litigation, continue to read about that every day now, and the dysfunction that we've seen in Washington as well. We think that experience that we just went through will have a negative impact in terms of profitability on the street.
And the controller believes the uncertainty will continue into 2014. The deal to end the government shutdown is only good through mid-January. The debt ceiling agreement expires in early February.
Investors like to have predictability and certainty in the investment environment, and without that, I think that hurts the ability to maintain profits.
Despite the volatility, the controller says he does not expect the state's multi-billion-dollar pension fund to be strongly impacted, and he also thinks the state budget will likely remain in balance. Profits on Wall Street are heavily taxed. They make up a substantial portion of all revenues collected for New York State government. Before the recession, the amount was around 20%. Now, since the crash of 2008, it represents closer to 15%. Governor Cuomo says he wants to cut taxes next year. He spoke about his intentions at a stop on Long Island to promote his plan for tax-free zones at college campuses.
The taxes aren't as low as they need to be, and we'll be doing more tax cuts next year.
The governor has not yet released a detailed plan on how to pay for any tax cuts. The state faces a projected $1 billion structural deficit in the new budget. Controller DiNapoli stayed out of that argument, saying Governor Cuomo has already appointed two commissions to work on an answer.
We have two commissions that are working on a report. I think we have to wait and see what they recommend and you know, what specific proposal comes out of that.
The general public does not seem to be any happier with Congress than those on Wall Street. A new poll by Siena College finds congressional approval numbers at a record low, with 78% viewing their senators and congressmen and women unfavorably. The poll has not recorded approval numbers for a politician this low since former Governor Eliot Spitzer resigned over a prostitution scandal. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week you spoke with Richard Brodsky, former 14-year assemblyman. He's now a senior fellow at Demos. He writes columns and comments on New York State government and politics. One of the issues you spoke about is, depending on who wins the New York City mayoral race, may depend on a lot on the relationship between that person and the governor.
Well, yes, I don't think there's much question in many people's minds as to who that eventual victor is going to be. It's going to be Bill de Blasio, who is not the favorite of a lot of news organizations, for example. I'm sure they'll all endorse him, but he was not the guy they were endorsing during the primary process. And he has taken some controversial positions, for example, charter schools. Now, he doesn't seem to like charter schools. And he's going to kill them by increment. One of the ways is that a lot of those charter schools, which I think represent something like 6% of the kids who go to school in New York, have either shared space or free space in public schools. So what we see is that he is now advocating charging them rent. Well, you know, as one Supreme Court justice once wrote in the 1800s, I believe, the power to tax is the power to destroy. And if you got to pay for it, it won't be as easy to run a charter school, which gives some parents choices that they might not have otherwise. So de Blasio is on one side on that. And I think it's fair to say the governor is on another. Governor Cuomo is on another. The governor believes in charter schools. He believes in giving parents a choice. And when it comes down to it, there may be a fight between the two of them. And it doesn't stop there. De Blasio is what we commonly call a progressive, which means, in other parlance, share the wealth. And believes in taxing people who make more than $500,000 in a city to pay for pre-K for kids who could not access that pre-K otherwise. The governor is still talking about running again as a fiscal conservative, which is what helped him win the first time. And he's actually talking about a tax cut. So sooner or later, these guys are going to have to do battle. Now, this is tough on the governor, more than on de Blasio, I suspect. Because he doesn't really need the new guy on the scene, who is obviously wildly popular in New York. So there are already feelers going out. We're hearing, oh, there must be other ways we can help. The state can help get the pre-K for everybody so that they don't have to do battle. Because every time you do battle between two people like Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio, it's what we call a zero-sum game. You know, there's a winner and there's a loser. And at very least, somebody loses some credibility. In this case, Cuomo might lose it because de Blasio is fighting with him. And New York City would appear to be in somewhat of a progressive mood right now. I mean, they've lived under Bloomberg for a long time. And, you know, a lot of people who are New Yorkers are progressives and they are intelligent and they don't see this as good for the city, what's happened, and they're ready to turn now. And we see that in the polling. So it could get very interesting between Cuomo and de Blasio.
Speaking of polling, there was a Siena College poll out this week confirming that the language in the casino referendum, which is argued as leaned toward the positive to get people to vote for the legislation allocating casinos in upstate New York, did just that, made it seem more people would vote for it.
Well, we do know that there have been published reports that Andrew Cuomo is very concerned that this upstate strategy of his, which includes setting up casinos in upstate New York, might be going south. There are some very well-organized anti-casino groups. You never know who's going to turn out in an election in an off year where, you know, you get the right kind of impetus going. If you had a fracking amendment, for example, every anti-fracker would be out there. I have no doubt about it. And it would lose. So you don't have one, by the way. But you get this amendment, which wants people to okay for the second year casinos in New York. And it says this is for education in the proposition. This is for education. This is for this and that. And it's clearly an advertisement for voting yes on the proposition. Whereas you don't have to do that. All you have to do in an amendment is to say yes or no. Are you in favor of this or not? But they didn't do that. And they sort of got caught. A lot of newspapers went for them, and the Cuomo people and a lot of other people said, this isn't right. This is a perversion of democracy. And there are a lot of people who are saying that right now. I also think this was ill-advised because when you try something like that and you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, it doesn't look good for you.
Also in this poll showed that while not all New Yorkers fully understood what the Moreland Act Commission was doing, that they wanted them to go after corruption.
Well, let's remember what voters know, which is often nothing or very little. I don't mean to be condescending about this, really, but we've done polls where we go out in the street and we ask people who the lieutenant governor is, and practically nobody knows. And I would hate to do it even with a governor, and a very popular governor, by the way. So, you know, the Moreland Act is somewhat obscure. The governor has permission constitutionally to set up an investigatory body known as the Moreland Act Commission. It's been done by Tom Dewey in the old days. And he did it after feuding with the legislature. And his position was, you know, if the legislature doesn't come around and reform itself and reform politics in New York and give me what I want, I'm going after them with this commission. That's fine. But as we said last week on the Legislative Gazette, what happened was, again, they sort of got caught because, according to our friend Ken Lovett, been on the show many times, there was a terrible thing where it turns out that the governor's office was calling in plays to say, don't subpoena this group and don't subpoena the real estate industry. By the way, the real estate industry has been huge supporters, you know, of the governor to get their financial records. So the Moreland Act Commission came along and they said, okay, well, we're going to disband. I think since Cuomo had appointed all kinds of brilliant people to that commission, people who would not sell their souls, I think they were all held their noses and said, we're going to disband and we're just put a constitutional amendment up. And then the newspapers got on them and editorial comment, and then they changed their minds. And then they really went for it. And I think the governor was somewhat, or his office was somewhat chastised about pulling that kind of thing again. Because after all, this is a governor who had $29 million in the bank. Somebody gave him that money. And among them were, I think, the real estate interests in New York. My point is, if you're going to appoint a Moreland Act Commission, then make sure that you know what you're doing and that you know what you want to have accomplished and think about the implications of how it could turn around and bite you in the behind. I just want to get back to your question, which is a good one, and that is, do people know what the Moreland Act is? No. Do they know what the Moreland Act Commission is? No. If you ask them, do you think that the legislature and the government is corrupt? They say yes. So they say, no, we don't know what the Moreland Act Commission is, but we don't like what's going on, and if the Moreland Act Commission is going to go after him, good.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A coalition formed in response to a planned statewide referendum about whether to amend the New York Constitution to authorize up to 7 additional casinos held a press conference this week at the Capitol Repertory Theater in downtown Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas attended and filed this report.
A veritable who's who of leaders of Capital Region arts nonprofits gathered in a show of solidarity under the moniker Upstate Theaters for a Fair Game. The group hopes to educate the public on what it sees as potential negative effects of casino expansion on what it refers to as local entertainment ecosystems. Noting that mid-sized arts and entertainment venues in neighboring states have been impacted by casino-based entertainment offerings, Group Chair and Proctor CEO Philip Morris emphasizes the aim is to ensure a level playing field is created for all entertainment venues seeking to bring talent to communities in New York.
Well, in fact, it's interesting because Turning Stone, which has a very modest facility, has largely turned the Stanley Theater in Utica to 5 3-night Broadway shows, and that's all. So after the city of Utica committed $20 million to an expansion, that facility is now basically empty because of the events at Turning Stone. From just my point of view at Proctor's, there are events I cannot get because Turning Stone gets them and puts an exclusivity on it. We have less programming, though not so much that it's painful, than we would, because I hear it's going to be at Turning Stone. And that's that. I can't get it.
Saratoga City Center President Mark Baker believes an expanded gaming facility in the Capital Region would be devastating and dramatic to local performing arts organizations and convention centers.
A competitive gaming event center with live entertainment and exhibit capabilities underwritten by gaming revenues would be devastating to the performing arts community, including SPACs, Proctors, Palace, UPH, and event facilities, which would include the City Center and the Times Union Center.
Arts reps from Saratoga are concerned that exclusive events at a casino, should one appear near the Spa City, would drain the life and revenue out of downtown at a rate of about $1 million a month. Coalition co-chair Marcia White, president and executive director of the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, explains the group is not anti-casino or anti-gambling.
On the contrary, we value any venue aimed at bringing economic vitality to our upstate community, but we believe these venues must complement each other.
The arts reps say it boils down to the fact that for-profit groups have the monetary power to cut better deals with talent agents and booking agencies than nonprofits. Voters will decide the fate of the casino referendum November 5th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has signed a law that caps agricultural land assessment increases. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The New York Governor's Office reports that the base assessment value for agricultural land has nearly doubled over the past 7 years. Legislation signed Tuesday will limit increases of agricultural assessments to a maximum of 2% a year. New York Farm Bureau Public Policy Director Jeff Williams says the move is crucial to control skyrocketing and unsustainable escalations. Williams notes that farmers across the state face the second highest property tax burden in the country at more than triple the national average.
Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been maxing out what was the former cap of 10%. So farmland values were increasing by 10% every year, so 50, 60, 70% over 5, 6, 7 years, which is untenable. So that would really spurred us on to try to limit that. Farmers will still be paying a lot of property taxes, but it will cap the amount that their property value escalates every year.
New York State has an agricultural assessment program, so a land in production is assessed differently than that for housing or business. Clinton County Treasurer Joe Giroux owns an 80-cow dairy farm on 600 acres of land. He explains how the assessment works.
The land is taxed on the soil type you have. In other words, if you live in an area like Altona, for example, very gravelly soil, doesn't have good nutritional value, they don't pay such a high rate on a soil type as I would if you had good heavy clay soils that were well drained. It's the type of land that we farm. So the better land you farm, the little bit more that you'll pay according to the value of the land per acre. So it all depends what area you live in. If you live in an area like along the lake, you're going to pay a little bit more per acre of taxes because you have a better nutritional value in your land.
Franklin County Farm Bureau President Kirby Selkirk owns Curbside Gardens in Chateauguay. He raises sheep, and most of his land is pasture. Knowing there is a 2% cap on its assessment, he says, is reassuring.
Some years ago, I received a publication of a study done downstate about how farmers get something like 60 or 65 cents back for every dollar that they pay in real estate taxes, whereas a homeowner gets a dollar and a quarter or a dollar 30 cents back. So for us as farmers, paying that tax is quite a significant burden. So this is one really nice thing to see happen that will be able to help that bottom line for the farmers in this state.
Joe Giroux, meanwhile, feels that it was past time for the new cap.
If you take Clinton County, just the price that we pay would regular pay for an acre of land, that'll be a dramatic change. And this is really a great thing that we've been looking for. So it's no worse than a factory needing a building to build its products. Well, we need land to produce the crops. And if we just follow the regular tax base, we'd never be able to grow at a reasonable cost.
Nearly 25% of New York's land is in agricultural use.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Three New York State Assembly members from the Lower Hudson Valley are calling for the new Common Core Link test to be scrapped. They say the tests are unfair assessments and costly to school districts. State Education Department disagrees. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Democratic Assembly members Tom Abenanti, David Buchwald, and Amy Pollan, all from Westchester County, penned a letter dated October 21st to the New York State Board of Regents Chancellor. Here's Pollan from Scarsdale.
It is our belief that it's time to slow down the assessments because the way they're going forward, you know, they're doing more harm than good.
She says they began work on the letter before State Education Commissioner John King's controversial cancellation of Common Core forums after one in Poughkeepsie erupted in anger and frustration. Now 12 forums are scheduled in school districts across the state, including in Westchester. The Common Core State Standards Initiative sets standards for kindergarten through 12th grade in English Language Arts, or ELA, and mathematics that states voluntarily adopt. Ken Wagner is Deputy Commissioner for Curriculum Assessment and Educational Technology at the New York State Education Department. He says state education officials have been receptive to feedback on the amount of testing at the local level, though he says the general structure of the test will remain the same.
We're also taking steps at the state side to reduce, for example, federally required double testing in math for eighth grade students. We are going to ask the feds to relax that requirement on us. But in terms of the existing 3 through 8 ELA and math Common Core tests, and then the upcoming Common Core assessments for Regis exams, our results and our tests are completely in line with other statewide and national measures, so we have no plan to change that course.
The assembly member's letter says the current ELA and math assessments are not valid indicators of college or career readiness, are not improving learning or instruction, and are not a reliable measure of a teacher's ability. In addition, they say the cost of testing is creating financial hardship on school districts with fewer resources. Amy Prisco-Ring has two children in the Washingtonville School District in Orange County, a fourth grader and a sixth grader. She sits on the school district's advocacy committee, which was formed in the spring with the goal of addressing Common Core issues. She applauds the effort by the assembly members.
I fully support their efforts to slow down and reevaluate these changes in the curriculum and the way that we test kids. I think kids are over-tested. My kids have to sit now for two local tests plus one New York State test. They actually sit for a longer amount of time than law students hoping to pass the bar exam.
Again, Assemblymember Paulin.
Children's lives are being turned upside down. We hear story after story about how a little 8-year-old comes out of the room in tears because they do not have the stamina for the test. And the tests, obviously, or what we've seen is, you know, are very poor reflection of future accomplishment. So we don't believe that the tests have legitimacy.
The State Education Department's Wagner says the ultimate goal is to prepare kids for college and successful careers.
On the stress question, though, the way this should be is there should be great teaching going on in classrooms, and then we should have a testing moment where students just demonstrate for us what they know and can do so adults can figure out how to move forward, and then great teaching should continue after that assessment moment. The assessments should not be a high-stress event for anyone.
Prisco King has a plea to state education officials.
If they would please consider the benefit of the majority of children and how children learn slowly and how education is a journey, not a race, and, you know, to really consider the child in the formula.
A State Education Department spokesman says officials will reply to the assembly member's letter. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1343. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.